Welcome, America, and everybody else who's listening around the world. You're listening to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. This episode is for January 6, 2017, the first of the year.
Yep, 2016 is gone.
And it's never, ever coming back. Aren't we all happy?
Yep.
Stuck me with a hell of a nasty flu on the way out, though, so I'm kind of pissed off about that.
Just for whatever reason, 2016 just had to get those nice little jabs before it finally died. It's kind of like how, if a bee dies when it stings you. It's kind of like
had
that.
to do that, yeah.
Yeah. Because they're just that mean enough.
Yeah.
But anyway, so joining me as always is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Elogi. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Yo.
Hello.
And you may notice that my microphone is not as blary as it was last time. Apologies for that. Apparently, for whatever reason, Skype decided to jack up the volume on my microphone for reasons I'm not exactly sure of.
Which made your impression of that movie even more interesting.
Yeah. Interesting, as in barely
Ow.
made that bit of a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. RIP all headphone users.
Yeah,
So,
sorry about that.
but anyway, some stuff happened. We're going to be discussing. We're going to be talking about some WikiLeaks news. There's been an iPhone prototype that actually surfaced. There are rumors that Microsoft is working on Windows 10 ne refresh, what they're codenaming Project Neon. Razer actually unveiled a laptop prototype with three 4K screens on it. We're not kidding.
Nope. Because why? Well, we'll talk about that later.
And of course,
I have thoughts.
yeah,
Well,
we all have
CES
thoughts.
is made for ridiculous shit like that, so
Yeah.
it's hard to be too surprised.
Yeah. And of course, we'll be wrapping up our episode with another installment of Gamer Mag Remembrances. This time we'll be talking about Electronic Gaming Monthly number 82. But before we can get to all that, we got to talk about what we've been up to this week. So, Phil, what have you been up to?
So it's been kind of a quiet week mostly. I've been listening to Red Seas Under Red Skies by Scott Lynch, the second book of the Gentleman Bastard series. Good stuff. After Locke and Jean basically pissed off the Bonds Magi of Carthane, they kind of had to get the hell out of Dodge, so they did. And they managed to get themselves into another hell of a problem now. So, yeah, these guys they've got issues. Trouble seems to like to find them. Of course, well, it doesn't help that they're trying to rob the biggest gambling house of the in the city. Well, so yeah, good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I've been reading that. I'm about halfway through that. I just finished watching the latest episode of The Grand Tour. Yeah, it's good. It's still good. They wrapped up their Namibia tour. It was fun. They built beach buggies, and miraculously, all three of them managed to make it. So, yeah. So
Doesn't
it's
happen all the time.
no. Can definitely tell they have a bigger budget now. So, it's fun. I don't know what they're gonna do next week, but it's about two we're two-thirds of the way through the first season of the show, and I'm glad it's still on. It's great. This is the season of Top Gear I kind of wish that the BBC would have made, but well, obviously that's not gonna happen. So there. Apart from that, I've also been listening to a bunch of music and stuff like that. I've got ordered a box of 10 records that I should be getting in soon. Some Supertramp, some Iron Maiden, Sex Pistols, Bootleg. What else did I order? Then Crooked Vultures. That whole Dave Grohl project that he did a few years ago. Yeah, I don't. I think they only released one album as that band, but yeah, it was pretty good. So yeah, that. coming, and what have I also been doing in the gaming space? Well, Diablo 3. The patch 2.43 came out, which added the Darkening of Tristram anniversary event, which is really, really fun, actually. Kind of a different style of game than, you know, Diablo 3 is, as far as, how enemies and stuff are placed, and the dungeons themselves, which make no goddamn sense, but that's how they were back then, so, you know. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It seems like there's a little bit more going on in this update than I originally thought. So I'm going to dig into it a bit more, because there's a bunch of stuff that in the in Tristram that you can't do unless you satisfy other needs, and you got to get a bunch of other items to do, you know, certain things. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. I recommend if you're going to start playing the Darkening of Tristram, do it with a new character. It's much more fun with a new character. So, yeah. That's
so that you won't be OP.
Yeah, pretty much. If you play it with a new character, it's just challenging enough, I find. Yeah.
Okay.
And then you get to the Butcher, and he probably kicks your ass, but that's how that's supposed to work. So, yeah. One thing that's nice is the dungeons retain persistence. So even if, you know... Actually, that's not really new. It's to Diablo 3.
Mm.
You know, it's just... if you die, whatever damage you did still has still been done, so you can go back and, you know, finish it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not new, but it's something that I appreciate, because, some of those enemies that you'll run into are bastards. So, that's been my week. How about you guys?
What about you, Pat?
Well, in addition to being extremely ill, I've been playing Yakuza 0 because my review copy came in with what time I found to take in some gaming that requires some measure of learning as far as it's new to me, and then when I just want to shut my brain off and just play something that I know. I've been doing quite a bit of Street Fighter V. I've actually changed my main in that game, so that's been pretty fun.
Yeah, you've gone back to Zangief, and it seems like you're annoying people left, right, and center now.
Yeah, I've been going on some respectable winning streaks, I'm happy to say, and just before we actually signed on for the show tonight, I got silver rank, so moving up.
Yeah.
This weekend is definitely going to be more about Yakuza 0, I feel.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, then. All right, then what about you, Chris?
So I've been watching a couple of movies, things I got for 99 Cent Rentals on YouTube. Kubo and the Two Strings.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really good, from the people that made Coraline.
Hmm.
So it's kind of a similar art style that's more Asian or Japanese influenced art style.
Hmm.
And it's real good. Definitely something people should check out. Just looks great, as well as tells an interesting story.
Yeah, I think it's one of the better animated movies that came out last year. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And probably one of the underrated ones out there too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it got kind of overlooked.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, you know, it was last year was at quite a few pretty quality animated films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that one got kind of drowned in it. So.
Yeah. And sort of along with that, I watched the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows movie, the second one of the Michael Bay, I'm guessing it's going to be a trilogy.
Okay.
This one is the one where they brought in all the fan service with Casey Jones is in there, Krang.
Yeah.
And the Technodrome.
Mm-hmm.
And Bebop and Rocksteady. Which those two stick out greatly because they look like the cartoon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. While everything else is modernized. You got, you know, the fat warthog with the stupid sunglasses, purple sunglasses and purple mohawk.
Mm-hmm.
And the biker jacket wearing rhino. It's like, I know you guys are directly going after the kids that watch the show, the cartoon, because you're not modernizing these two.
Yeah.
And it looks ridiculous in his human form as well. The guy that turns into Bebop. It's Gary Anthony Williams.
Yeah.
Of Whose Line, Malcolm in the Middle, and various other shows.
Mm-hmm.
Because he actually wears those glasses and has the mohawk, and it's like, what the hell?
Why would you do that?
Yeah. That's, we need the kids, the 20 and 30 year olds that watch that show to pay attention to us. The movie itself is okay. Nothing really amazing. There's not really even much of a plot development. Shredder is in jail. He gets broken out, goes to this teleporter, and meets Krang, who says, you know, there's three parts for this interdimensional teleporter to bring me and the Technodrome and my army to Earth to take it over. They do that, and then the trolls fight him and stop him. That's the plot.
Yeah,
it's not much going on. There's a little bit of strife with the turtles, of them not being all in sync, but then when things go down, they get in sync and win.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Gee.
Yeah. I know, in that sense, it was fine, but...
Yeah. Wouldn't buy the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Not unless it was like $5. Maybe I would. I don't know. As for games, I've been doing a lot on the 3DS this week. I've been playing Picross E7, which came out right near the end of last year. And that is more Picross. And that's good. So, yeah, that's... There are a lot of Picross games on the 3DS.
Yeah.
That is the seventh of that line. Then there's 3D Round 2... There's the Twilight Princess thing. There's Pokemon Picross. And there's the original Mario's Picross.
Hmm.
That's what? Nine? No, not nine. Like 11, 12 games. Which is crazy. Then seems like we're not going to have a touch screen on the Switch. So it's like, well, that's going to be a very different game.
Yeah.
Mm.
If they're going to keep going on with it, which seems like it should.
Yeah.
It made seven of these. It seems like people are buying them.
Yeah.
Along with that, I've been playing Earthbound.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had it on the Wii U and sort of getting back into it on the 3DS. And for as good as that game is, it's also completely infuriating and with enemy designs that are just there to annoy the hell out of you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, this enemy takes two shots to kill. For the second shot, he will use his move that calls in another enemy. Or this one that just uses an attack that lowers your attack and defense ratings.
Hmm.
This one that gives you a cold every time, which is their form of poison.
Hmm.
It's like just... Over and over again, a lot of these enemies are just annoying as hell. And the whole thing where you can get into, like, start the fight with them, and it just waits long enough for anybody else nearby to just come running in, like, hey, we're going to fight too.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this went from being a quicker fight to now it's going to drag on forever because there's four more enemies in here.
Hmm.
And it just pisses me off. But the good thing is I got save states, so I can get around a lot of the bullshit.
Yeah.
I think now I am pretty overleveled. I'm in the Happy Happy Village. with the cult and all that.
Hmm.
And I ended up going through a dungeon with bears in it and such, beating the second boss that's in there. And I think because I went through all that and sort of did some grinding in there, and I'm overleveled for the actual like cultist in that village. So that'll probably be actually good.
Yeah.
Less dealing with their crap. But yeah, that's a really good game. Just glad because I dealt with all the bullshit in the other versions, now I know how to avoid all of it and exploit it for my own gain. Also started up Link to the Past. Not very far in it, just in the first dungeon. I think I just got to the throne to get to like that secret passage.
Yeah.
That's about as far as I got. I never really played that much in the past. I think I beat the first dungeon. That's about as far as I've ever gotten in that. But yeah, looking forward to playing some more of that. Earthbound's kind of taking my time of these Super Nintendo games I have on there.
Yeah.
Sort of along with that, I was playing Lost Sea on the PS4.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That game is... It's a roguelite. A little bit of an action RPG.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really easy. I had a session that was going on... I had been going about 2 hours.
Hmm.
At a certain point, I just let myself get killed because I didn't want to keep playing it. There's no save and quit or anything.
Yeah.
Like, I was playing it before bed. At a certain point, I just said, just go into rest mode. I'll come back tomorrow.
Hmm.
And I kept going, got beat the first set of levels, the sort of tropical island theme, got to the desert theme, got nearly to the boss, and I just said, fuck this. It's not bad, it's just slow and easy and not, doesn't really seem to change.
Yeah, it's not really very enjoyable. The pacing is just kind of a mess.
It's slow. They just basically have like certain templates for, like the way the map is designed, it's sort of hexagonal squares or spots on the map. Mm-hmm. It seems like they just have like a set amount of those and they just rearrange them for each island. So it's like, oh, here's this thing where there's going to be a health tree. It's like there's so much health.
Mm-hmm.
So many of those trees that just replenish your health big time. It's like, if I want to just run through all this, it'd be a good podcast game.
Yeah.
Podcast game or like a movie game, just put some Netflix on or something and just play through that mindlessly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I like it, but I don't want to play it much.
Glowing endorsements.
Yeah.
I like it, but I don't want to play it.
I like it because I could probably actually beat it.
Mm.
Be one of the few like roguelites that I could actually beat.
Yeah.
But it's not as interesting as stuff like, Spelunky or Rogue Legacy or any of those sorts of games.
Yeah,
yeah, that's been largely it.
Cool.
How about you, Brandon?
Well, first and foremost, I am still going through Final Fantasy 15. Still enjoying it. Still have not watched Kingsglaive yet, though I really need to. Because I'm starting to get to that point where I'm getting a feeling I'm missing some shit.
I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Yeah.
Any good selfies yet?
A few. Yeah, that's something I forgot to mention. One of your party members carries a camera around with him and is constantly taking pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah, even in the middle of battle. It's like,
mm-hmm.
Fuck with
not
your
phone.
Not that
he's that good at it.
Mm. I've seen some good selfies of like, of him taking pictures of enemies clipping through things. And shit like that.
Yeah. But, I mean, as far as, like, the actual gameplay is concerned, it's still a lot of fun.
Hmm.
The game, fortunately, does have a sort of a quick move feature. Sort of. It goes back to where your last, you know, you last made camp or last slept at.
Yeah.
Which is helpful because there is a lot of distance between some of these objectives you got to get to.
Yeah.
At least, you know, the good thing, though, is that, you know, you got the regalia, the car, and on that car you've got, you know, the mixtape that's on there, which is a bunch of remixes of classic Final Fantasy tunes, as well as bits of original soundtracks of 7 and 8 and 9, bits from Kingsglaive, stuff like that, so you're never bored. graphics-wise, it looks incredible. And like I said last time, one of the things that this game has made me realize is that living in a JRPG universe would actually be pretty terrifying in real life. Especially when you realize just how close some of these monsters are to where people live.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of seems like a Dragon Ball style situation.
Didn't
they touch on that in 8?
In 8?
Village?
Yeah, that village.
Where Laguna had to exterminate monsters along the roads.
Yeah.
And they got into the town square and everything.
Yeah. I think one of the things with 8 was that there's supposed to be like some magical barriers or something that people use.
Yeah.
That they're able to keep monsters out most of the time. And I guess at that point it had failed. And I gotta say, the monster design in this game is amazing. Like, the way they've taken, you know, some of these classic Final Fantasy creatures and given them this sort of almost National Geographic-like sheen to them is both really awesome and really terrifying at the same time. One of my favorite things in that game so far is actually Justice Monster 5, which, those you don't know, that's the action pinball minigame that's like everywhere in that universe. Like if you go to a diner or a gas station, they'll have a couple machines set up somewhere. Actually a lot of fun, very addictive. I can understand why they made this into a phone app.
Well, that's getting shut down or just got shut down.
I've been playing that. I started playing Fate Stay Night. Yes, the original visual novel. Yep. It's the original. It's the one by the one that was fan translated by what's their name? I forgot what the group's called, but it's good. It's got all the original stuff in it, including the H scenes. So, yep, that's still in there.
Yeah.
And
fan translated. I'd be more surprised if it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, because you got to remember, there's actually like three versions of it. There's the original. Rhea Nualta version, which was for the PS2. And then there's the one, I think, in 2004. That was like a re-release of the original with updated graphics. And I think that's the one I'm playing. But yeah, so this I've also got Tsukihime on my computer as well. So I'm
very sort of, nice.
Yep, just dove headfirst into the Nasuverse, I guess.
So you're enjoying your tight mood right now.
Yep. Fate Stay Night is, of course, a visual novel. With occasional, you know, choices that affect the plot. It's basically about this thing called the Holy Grail War that's happening in Japan, where there's like seven different magi or magesses, sorcerers who have to call a what they call a servant, which is sort of like a familiar, but is like fully human and is basically the soul of a past hero come back to reincarnate to fight for you. And
the term that I keep hearing throughout the fandom is epic souls, which is probably the best way of saying it.
Yeah. And basically, the story more or less revolves around a couple different. I'm actually still on the fate part of the game right now, which means it's focusing mostly on Emiya, Shiro Emiya. And he's the game actually starts in a prologue, which is with a Ren Tokasa, who's a, or Ren Toksaha, I can't remember. Yeah. AKA the Twin Tail Tsundere machine. And basically, she is an experienced magus, whereas your character is not really. He was the adopted son of a sorcerer, and he kind of learned how to use some magic. And then turns out, apparently, he has the ability to call forth a servant, and that servant ends up being Saber, which is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl in a big suit of armor and a sword. Hijinks ensue.
Of course.
That's really the best way to describe it. Hijinks ensue.
It's true.
And, yeah, and, you know, basically it's, you know, Shinji Emiya trying to... Shiki Emiya, that's the name, Shiki, trying to sort of go through his normal everyday life while also having to deal with the whole Holy Grail War thing, and also the fact that...
Shiki is Tsukihime.
Yeah. Oh, yes, it's the other.
This is Shiro.
Shiro Emiya, yeah, that's right. See, I get them mixed up. But yeah, so, yeah, also the fact that both Saber, his servant, and Ren have both moved into his house. Because that's just how this stuff normally goes for some reason.
Yeah.
God, people in Japan are awful pushy when it comes into moving into people's places. But, yeah, and it's basically... There's like three different pathways in the game. There's the fate pathway, which is the original, the first start. And then you play again, and then you'll go to what they call the Unlimited Blade Works. And then there's Heaven's Feel. And Heaven's Feel is the one that's loaded with the H content.
And the feels.
And the feels, yes. Don't get me wrong, the other two have their the other two pathways have their share, but not to the degree that Heaven's Feel does. at least that's what I've been told. So yeah, I've been playing that. I went to GameStop and I got a copy of Bravely Default for my 3DS because I never finished that one. And of course I still got Pokemon Sun, so there's also that. That's pretty much the end of my gaming stuff. As far as real life goes, I've mostly been dealing with some ear troubles.
Oh, lovely.
Ooh. Yeah, it's allergy stuff. It happens this time of year.
Better than an infection, though.
No, it's not an infection, but it is backed up. it's when stuff gets so, it's when the wax gets so backed up in there that it starts turning dark.
Yeah.
And I've had to like get some peroxide to like dissolve it and get it out.
Yeah.
So it's no fun. I'm familiar with
the process.
Yeah.
Yep.
Highly into it.
Yes, it is no fun. So yeah, that's pretty much been the, of my week, mostly just dealing with weather. It's been rainy off and on, and temperature is going to be dropping over the next few days. Of course, when I say dropping, I mean by southeastern levels. So
yeah.
There was even a hint that we might get some snow this weekend, and then they changed the weather forecast. No.
Hmm.
No snow.
Hmm. We got an ice storm.
Yeah, it all stayed up here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so is there anything anybody wanted to add before we move on?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, then, I guess then it's time to talk about everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. So, as everybody knows, we've got a president-elect, and he's going to be moving into the White House later on this month, the 20th. And as everybody knows, one of the things about, you know, if you can call it great things about America is that, yeah, pretty much anybody can be freaking president.
Apparently.
You know, as long as you, as long as you can pass the guidelines, you know, got to be American-born citizen, got to be 35 years or older, et cetera, et cetera. So pretty much, if you can pass that, then yeah, you're basically legible to be president of the United States. And
I think
because,
we're stretching that about as far as it can go, though.
Yeah. So the thing is about, because of the way that America is, we have a very unique type of political creature that's kind of unique to the United States, and that is the perennial presidential candidate. These are regular lunatics who run for president every few years and have done so for a good 20, 30 years. So how about we explore a couple of those individuals, shall we? All right, so first things first, let's talk about probably one of the most infamous perennial candidates of all time, a gentleman by the name of Lyndon LaRouche. Does this name sound familiar to anybody?
Nope.
You don't? Well, you're lucky. Because Lyndon LaRouche, on top of being a perennial presidential candidate, also happens to have one of the biggest political cults in the United States. He originally started out being part of the far left, being as a Trotskyist sect, for what was called the U.S. Labor Party. And then, ever since then, he's basically ran as an independent candidate for the Democratic Party. Lyndon LaRouche does not believe that the Holocaust ever happened.
Yes.
He believes that the British royal family still controls the majority of the Western world.
Okay.
He also keeps very tight-fisted control over his followers. Yeah, it looks a lot like a cult. He has said that he wants to solve the world's water crisis by building a canal through the Sub-Sahara using nuclear weapons.
What the fuck?
Don't think that would really work, but okay.
And he is convinced that the Beatles were some sort of evil, satanic mind control experiment by the KGB.
Well, see, that I agree with.
Valid.
Yeah.
Do you remember back right around 2009, 2010, when the Tea Party first came into existence?
Yeah.
And you started seeing all those people waving posters with Barack Obama with a Hitler mustache, talking about how the Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act was a Nazi-like policy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 9 times out of 10, those were generally people working for LaRouche. That's
oh,
right.
Boy.
All right. So that's one particular. We'll talk about one very quickly. A guy I actually kind of like because I just like him. A gentleman who also is an independent Democrat. You've heard of him. His name is Vermin Supreme.
Yes.
Yes, he is a bearded.
I'm familiar with.
Yes, he is a hairy bearded peace activist who wears a shoe on his head.
Okay.
You really don't need to know that much more.
I'd vote for him.
Okay. Okay, and now to, again, back to the other side of the political spectrum. A gentleman by the name of John G. Smith, who was a perennial candidate for the American Independent Party. Now, a couple things you need to know about John G. Smith. Number one, he really fucking hated Richard Nixon. He famously said that when Nixon made his historic trip to China, as you know, everybody, Nixon was the man who opened up trade relations with China in the early 70s.
Yeah.
Schmidt remarked, "I was only upset that he came back."
Ooh.
He
sounds like a lovely person to be around.
Oh, yeah. And, as the good people at Cracked once famously said, if someone ever decided to compile recordings of the craziest things ever said to the media, they may as well call it John G. Smith's The Greatest Hits. For example, there was the time where he casually suggested that that the U.S. would benefit from a military coup. In his words, not a bad military coup, mind you, but a good one, like Pinochet in Chile.
Wow.
Okay. That's...
He was also the sworn enemy of famous feminist lawyer Gloria Allred. He famously put out a press release about her called Attack of the Bull Dykes that described her as a slick butch lawyeress and her supporters as a sea of hard Jewish and arguably female faces.
Yeah. So, and this guy continues to run or did for a while?
No, he died, I think, back in around 2000. Yeah. Although his legacy does kind of live on in a weird way. You know who one of his daughters is?
Mm-hmm.
You may have heard of her. Mary Kay Letourneau.
Oh.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. I'm not joking. Look it up. Yes, that. Merrick, do I need to jog anyone's memory here?
No.
Not mine.
Okay, if anybody's listening who doesn't know, Mary Kay Letourneau was a school teacher who became infamous for having an affair with a 12-year-old student. Who then went to jail for statutory rape, came out, and then they both married.
Yeah. America.
That's America.
They had a few kids along the way, too, didn't they?
Yep, they've got some children.
Like, while that was playing out?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And finally, I think to round it about, we'll go to a more recent individual. From a woman who was actually a member of Congress for a long time. She ran on the Green Party ticket in 2008. Her name is Cynthia McKinney. Does this name sound familiar?
I've heard of her, but don't know much about her.
Basically, she spent most of her time in Congress trying to pass a bill to release the government's secret records on Tupac Shakur. She also had a habit of assaulting Capitol Police. She then claimed at one time that the government executed 5,000 black males and dumped them in a swamp in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And she kept talking on and on about she definitely had information about this because she had insiders. And let's be honest, a lot of insiders think those insiders were inside her head.
Or just cracked. You never know.
So again, the wonderful thing about American politics is really anybody can join. And maybe, just maybe, our standards are maybe just a little too low.
Maybe.
I think that 35 and older criteria needs to be nixed.
Yeah.
It should probably be 40 and younger.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. Maybe you call all Logan's Run on.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Oot.
Democracy.
It's great when it works.
Mm-hmm. Well then, moving on from that, we of course have to do our asshole of the week. And we had some definite candidates this week, including the four assholes in Chicago who beat up the mentally impaired 18-year-old white guy. For reasons that were both purely racist and just cruel. There really is no way to joke about that. It's just fucking horrible. But this week, but the thing is about that is there's evil and then there's just snide evil. And because of that, our asshole of the week is none other than Representative Paul Ryan. Chris?
Yep. So one of the big news bits that happened this week is that the GOP is planning to defund Planned Parenthood.
Again.
Yeah.
This has become sort of a tradition now.
Yeah.
Yep. And so people in support of Planned Parenthood gathered about 87,000 petition signatures, and we're going to deliver them to Paul Ryan's office on today, Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And they were greeted by Capitol Police when they arrived.
Of course.
Let's see. They held them up as they came in and had to wait for a staffer to come down and let them in, which is not normal.
Nope.
Once they got there, his office was locked. Half a dozen officers stood guard in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
Not threatening at all.
Nope.
They apparently didn't know if he was even around. This wasn't even his office that they were led to. But on the door, there was a sign that said, "Please knock. Only scheduled appointments will be admitted." So that sort of led them to believe there were people around.
Mm.
As well as it being early Friday afternoon, not time for people to be out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there are plenty of pictures on Planned Parenthood of them taking pictures next to a Paul Ryan plaque for his right near his office.
Mm-hmm.
So they're standing there with their boxes. Yeah, so pretty much he ditched them.
Yeah.
Lovely.
So the voices of the people are not being heard
on this issue. You really gotta wonder, you know, sometimes I really do wonder if folks like Paul Ryan are really intelligent enough to realize when they are on the obviously wrong side.
No, I don't think they are.
Like, when you have that many angry people showing up at your office, getting ready to beat the door down, don't you think it might be in your best interest to at least hear them out a bit?
Nope. Goes against God's wishes. That's all he cares about.
Mm. Yeah. Fucking hell. But to top that out, for our heroes of the week, hero or heroes, we're not really sure. So everybody probably knows, after the last election, California officially legalized marijuana for recreational use.
Yep.
And let's be honest, so goes California, so goes eventually the rest of the country.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Colorado started, and, you know, it's just going to move from there, so.
Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised, actually, if Georgia ends up being the next, one of the next round of states to do that. Against the better wishes of some of our leaders, because I can tell you from experience, people, at least where I live, tend to treat the weed laws pretty lax.
they're just suggestions.
Yeah. But anyway, the reason I'm bringing this up is because during New Year's, some vandals showed up and they actually altered the Hollywood sign.
Yes.
So instead of reading Hollywood, it now reads Hollyweed.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's a work of art.
Yeah.
Belongs in the Smithsonian. So if you're wondering how they did that, how they physically did this, basically all they did is they took some a couple of white sheets to put between, you know, the middle of those so that they could form the first part of the E.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put some black
tarp.
Yeah, some black tarp to form the other parts of the E.
Yeah.
One of those happened to be, I think, a peace sign, an anti-war protest sign. So this is officially our hero of the week.
That's a hell of a feat on a big giant sign.
That's
everybody can see, pretty much.
Yeah. That's usually lit.
This is my favorite part right here. It says, the vandal was caught on security camera footage between midnight and 2 a.m. local time, but police can't tell his race or height because it was dark and raining, Garcia said. I'm also of the police that maybe the police kind of don't want to catch this guy.
Probably. It's like, eh, why bother?
Like, technically, we know this is vandalism, but this is just too awesome to hurt with, to mess with right now.
Yeah.
I'm kind of okay with this.
And they didn't, you know, break the sign or anything. Just put tarp over it. It's not. It's not like.
Yeah, I guess this is not the first time this has happened either.
Hmm. Oh,
I have a
no.
picture of it happening about 34 years ago.
Yeah, it's happened off and on over the years.
Yeah.
So that's our hero of the week. So moving on. First things first. You can now buy your very own home robot.
Yes, you can. It's called the Curry.
It's adorable and also kind of creepy.
Yeah, those googly eyes things is, kind of scary, but it looks cool. You can have it follow you around the house, or it can just walk around and, well, walk around, just roll around on its little wheels. And it makes cute sounds when you talk to it.
Yeah.
You can send it to, if it hears a noise, it'll, like, go and investigate and report back to you. No word yet whether it will kill you in your sleep, but I'm that might be an optional add-on.
Also, no word if you can have sex with it yet, either.
Yeah. I'm sure
coming.
Somebody will mod that.
There's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is, right now, this is more or less just an adorable little novelty.
Yeah.
It's basically a
novelty, but.
And of course the Japanese were the ones who came up with this.
Well, it was Bosch, and it was developed here in the U.S., so.
Okay.
The U.S.
So. Yeah, I like all the pictures of the all-wood flooring homes.
Yeah, nobody has those, so. We'll see how it does on carpet, if it's just, like, spinning around.
Carpets, uneven rugs, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonder if it has a tone for, I've fallen and I can't get up. So, joy.
You know eventually there'll be an R2-D2 version.
Oh, if they did an R2-D2 version, they would print money.
Yeah.
Just write the check to Disney and just make that happen and just rake in all of the money.
Yeah. Make sure to include the cattle prod, too.
Yeah.
So. All right, so, yeah. Home robot.
It's
the future is now.
Yep.
Or it's coming very, very fast.
Yeah.
Another news, this is actually good news for those of you out there who are diabetic. Are any of you guys diabetic?
I'm not, but I know
I'm at risk.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, they have created a new glucose monitor. As a lot of people know, one of the things about being diabetic is that you basically have to stab yourself fairly often in order to check your blood sugar level.
Yeah.
Yep.
And take it from someone who has quite a few diabetics in his family. That's no fun.
No.
Because you basically have to bleed yourself every time to do it.
Yeah. So you can wonder why people don't like to test themselves all that often and pretty much only do it, you know, in the morning and at night. But, you know, you should be testing yourself several times a day.
Yeah, but now from PK Vitality, we have got a painless, blood-free glucose monitoring device.
Yeah.
Basically, let me see. I'm trying to focus on it because the damn, there we go. The K-Track glucose, that's what it's called. Basically, all you have to do is just press your finger down on it. Basically, it's like a little eye watch, basically.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is press your finger down on the touchpad at the bottom of the device, and within seconds, it will tell you your glucose level. And you won't so no more cumbersome and painful blood-based tests. Doesn't even require any calibration. Just a simple press.
Yeah. Yeah. It actually does have a needle, but because it doesn't go very deep, it just goes one level below the surface. So it just gets a little drop of a subcutaneous fluid, basically.
Yeah.
And that's all it needs.
Kind of imagine, imagine like you have like a dried breadcrumb or something on a key on your keyboard and you press down on that. That's pretty much how it feels.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'm definitely now let's just hope they can, my grandparents.
Yeah. Now let's just hope they make it affordable enough so that the average person can actually use it.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. It looks like they're working on that certification so that they can possibly be covered by insurance, which is what they kind of want. Because, if you're covered by insurance, a lot more people will be able to get it. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right. Canada, anyway, but that's.
Yes, in Canada, of course. In the United States, however, where we don't have any universal health care. Yeah. The closest we've got is Medicare.
Yeah.
And that's only for the elderly.
Yeah.
And they're always trying to gut money from that thing. So. Yeah. Because as we already mentioned earlier with Paul Ryan, our politicians are assholes.
Yeah. I'm noticing that.
So, moving on from that, so I know some of you guys are fans of the Young Turks, right?
Yeah, some of us, yeah.
Watch it on occasion. Okay, so do you guys know who Jimmy Dore is?
Yeah.
Jimmy Dore has his own show on the TYT network. He also has his own podcast. And recently, he interviewed a gentleman who was involved from West Virginia, who by the name of Nick Smith, he's a Fight for 15 activist. Do I need to explain what Fight for 15 is?
Couldn't hurt.
I know what it is, but.
Yeah. Fight for 15 is basically a national movement to get the national minimum wage raised to $15 an hour.
Yeah.
Because the general reasoning is that the minimum wage has not gone up with the level of inflation. And because of that, people are basically being forced to work for very little, barely to survive. It's take it from me, it's very difficult to try and survive on a wage of $7.50 an hour.
Yeah.
Which is actually more than it used to be. Up until a few years ago, it was like $5-something an hour.
Yeah.
You know? And so the guy, Nick Smith, is actually, he's from West Virginia. He works from, he works specifically for Waffle House.
Yeah.
One of my favorite places in the world. And he is also from a family of coal miners. Because, those of you guys know in West Virginia, coal mining was like one of the big industries over there.
Yeah.
Not just there, but like the Appalachian area in general.
Yeah.
And basically, let me just put it this way. If you ever wanted to know what it sounds like when a Southerner is woke, this is what it sounds like when a Southerner is woke. Have any of you guys had a chance to watch this?
Yeah.
Anyone?
I have not.
Yeah. Nope. You really need to, because this guy is a treat. first of all, he completely blows away Jimmy Dore by off the cuff identifying himself as a socialist, which is already fairly rare here in the United States, but in the southern United States,
doesn't happen.
Yeah,
does not happen. And make no mistake, this guy looks and sounds like me.
Yeah.
Except less hairier, basically. And he does not screw around. He basically said, you were talking about, crony capitalism. I think capitalism is working just the way it's supposed to do. It's supposed to keep the working class down. He basically goes on about how, trying to blame, Mexican immigrants for a loss of labor is bullshit because in his life, no immigrant ever stole a coal job. The dude just in general, you have to watch him. He brings in just a great deal of basically the shit I've been saying for years.
Realism.
Yeah. And, it's just good to hear it finally showing up.
Yeah.
In the areas where I live.
Yeah.
Cause it, the political window in the United States is changing very fast.
Yeah.
And guys like him, there is going to be more like him in the next few years. You just wait.
Yeah.
I believe it.
So if you get a chance, watch that. It is amazing.
Yeah.
And in other internet news, WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, accused rapist that's the head of it, says they want to create a database of verified Twitter accounts for reasons.
Well, it's not really that bad of an idea.
So, let's see. What is it that they're...
Yeah, so the thing that their Twitter account says, we are thinking of making an online database with all verified Twitter accounts and their family... /job/financial/housing relationships.
Yeah.
I'm not so much a fan of this idea anymore.
Yeah. See where this kind of goes off the rails?
And their defense is, replied to them, says, reads like a threat to begin doxing people. Their response is, no, it is to develop a metric to understand influence networks based on proximity graphs. Seems like bullshit.
Yeah.
That's
saying I want to keep track of people that you might want to attack later on.
Yeah. That's a pretty naked sort of blackmail attempt right there.
Yeah.
Like you don't it's pretty transparent.
Yeah, it's really that whole place for WikiLeaks in the world. This is not it. So
no,
yeah, just walk away from this one.
And yeah. What's funny is they mentioned that earlier today, they were getting upset. They were claiming the Obama administration was leaking information to NBC for an article they were writing.
Mm-hmm.
So WikiLeaks was getting mad about other people leaking stuff.
Yeah. Well, by the way, those of you who don't know, U.S. intelligence apparently released some declassified material that basically proves that that Putin and the other folks in Russia were intentionally trying to create a campaign to help Trump get elected.
Yeah. Apparently, it worked.
Yeah. It's not as bad as like people saying, they hacked the election or they hacked the DNC. They didn't. The reason I'm bringing that up and the reason I tell people to be, keep suspicious about that type of stuff is, there really does seem to be a lot of people in the U.S. who want to start a war with Russia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would prefer that not happen.
No.
And frankly, right now, we have no legitimate reason to go to war with them.
No.
Now, Cyber War.
Sure.
Go battle on the grid.
You know. Folks would say maybe they're trying to start up the Cold War again. The problem is the part of the reason the Cold War worked the way it was is because of the way that they could control information. Mm. Yeah, you can't really do it like that anymore.
No.
Yeah, we were afraid of what we didn't know about them.
Yeah.
Now we pretty much know most.
And then by the time we found out, we realized that they could barely produce a light bulb, much less a nuclear reactor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They made the Lada. I don't think we really had much to worry about.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they finally got Trump to admit that Russia might have had a hand in trying to influence the election in some way.
Yeah.
Which is the first time he's admitted to that.
Yeah.
He's been trying to back WikiLeaks and Putin more than our own intelligence agencies.
Yeah.
He just had a meeting with them, like, today, didn't he? So,
yep.
Yeah.
One of those things.
I'm like, predicting one-term president.
One better, half-term.
Quarter-term.
Yeah,
like, he doesn't even make it the next Christmas.
Nah, I think he makes it a year and a half.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on from there, Razer. Yep. Everybody knows Razer.
Yep, purveyor
those
of
crazy bastards.
PC peripherals.
Mm-hmm. Lunatics that they are. Yeah, recently,
Razer keyboard right now.
Yeah, recently unveiled a new prototype for a laptop with 3 4K screens.
Yeah.
Because and the two on the side are automated.
Yeah, they swing out on their own. Okay.
And this is specifically meant to be a gaming laptop, by the way.
Yeah, a gaming laptop with 3 4K screens. What in the hell are you going to power that with? So you need to power 4K and get decent frame rates on a PC right now, you need a, GTX 1080 or something of that. Hilk, you know, very high performance graphics card.
Mm-hmm.
To power to drive 3 screens simultaneously.
It, yeah, 17.3 inch screens.
Yeah, 3 of them.
Yeah. So, how the hell are you gonna are you gonna have to hook this thing up to NORAD to get this thing to work? Because
well,
that's a lot of processing power that's gonna need to go into this
1080
thing.
In it.
Yeah, it has a 1080. It's also going to be compatible with the Razer Core, which is an external graphics solution. So
a 12-pound laptop.
Yeah.
Inch and a half thick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's
VR ready.
And I sure God hope that there's a powerful fan attached to that thing.
Oh, yeah. It'll probably hover when you turn it on.
It's got a backlit keyboard.
Yep.
It's going to have to, because that much processing power going into that.
It is a really nice looking thing, though, I'll say that much.
Oh, I'm not knocking the visuals. The visuals are great.
Yeah.
But why?
Yeah, this is one of those things for people who have way more money than sense.
Yeah, this is like a concept device.
Yeah, this is like the hardware version of a concept car or something.
Yeah.
And there are definitely those at CES, too.
Yeah. Yeah, the Faraday FF91 with the amazing demo fail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I definitely know somebody who, when he saw the announcement for this, he said, I want this now.
Mm.
He's a video editor. Three screens for editing video. Yeah, that's a lot more useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
if he's on the when he's on the road, having something like that he can do all of his editing and have a preview window and have his timeline and maybe have Twitter on another screen. Yeah, he's all about that.
Yeah, but for gaming.
Yeah, I don't expect that you would game on all three screens. I don't know why you'd have them if you couldn't, but. I don't think you got enough power to do 3-screen gaming.
Yeah.
And other demos of, like, Battlefield running on this thing.
Mm. So.
Yeah, they're comparing it to one of their other models called the Blade Pro, which I believe is just one.
Yeah, it's one
17.3-inch 4K screen.
Mm-hmm.
It gets about 4 hours battery life.
Yeah, right.
And $3,500.
Yeah.
So this thing's got three of those screens.
Yeah.
That's got to be at least $5,000.
Yep.
It's like, you could just spend way less money and just get a PC.
Yeah. And an Oculus Rift.
Yeah.
And two other monitors.
Two other monitors. But I love seeing this stuff at CES because it's, you know, it's like, you get the engineers for this company. Sometimes they just need to just be able to cut loose and make something completely crazy.
And it's like when you see those 100-inch TVs.
Yeah.
It's like there's maybe like 100 people in the world that could use this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's pretty cool to see.
Where is Razer from? Where are they based out of?
They're a Taiwanese company, but they're
Taiwan.
They have an office in California, though.
All right. Because I was thinking, like, if this was a Japanese device, it would be they'd basically work it the way that the Japanese would do, like a concept car, which is maybe put doggy ears on it and a light that tells you how it's feeling.
Nope, not. It does have a lot of green lights, though.
Yeah. By the way, that part about the dog, well, it was a doggy tail, but that part about the tail and the light telling out, it's feel like I'm not making that up. That was an actual concept car that a Japanese manufacturer made years ago.
Yeah.
Look it up. It even showed up on Gran Turismo once.
Yep.
All right. Well, moving on from there, we got some Microsoft rumors. So Windows 10 came out, and when it came out and people upgraded, everyone was kind of meh. Okay. Like, you know, it looks nice, but why?
It was a good version of 8.
Yeah. And then they had the anniversary update earlier in 2016 that came out in August.
I still don't know if I have that or not.
Why now?
There's not really any outward
way
of telling if I had it or not.
Well, now,
then you can tell.
Well, now rumors are flying about the next update to my Windows 10, which is being codenamed Project Neon. And so,
what are we speculating on this one?
Okay, let's see.
So it's kind of like changing the whole design language of Windows 10.
Okay.
So it's mainly just a UI overhaul.
Yeah.
Oh.
So kind of like the current look of Windows 10 is very much rooted in Windows 7.
Yeah.
Just kind of updating that.
Which I'm using.
Yeah. And so this is sort of taking some of that sort of Metro style, sort of bringing that out to the whole OS.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Hopefully we don't go back to full screen apps again, because, yeah, that didn't work so well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it's just going to be the same as the current style, just the new style to Windows and such.
Yeah. So it looks like one of the main things they're introducing is blur. They're calling it acrylic, which is essentially blur in the background, sidebar, or the navigation of the app, which, yeah, that's basically what I've got in Windows 7. Yeah. So
they're making that
because
they took it out, and now they're putting it back.
Yeah. You know what? Stuff like this makes me realize why I never, ever want to, you know, update from Windows 7. Because,
well,
I mean, there's really no reason to.
Well, if you're going to keep the same system, then yeah. I mean, I don't really see why you'd have to. If it's working for you, why bother updating?
Exactly.
But, you know, if you're going to buy a new computer, you're just going to
If you're buying a new computer, it's probably going to be preloaded on there. So, you know, why bother? But
so I'm one of the idiots who did update Windows 7 to 8 and then to 10.
Yeah, and how did that go?
I had to reformat my computer a couple weeks ago. Remember that?
Yep.
So, yeah, it went swimmingly. but it's all working now, so. Yeah. I like Windows 10. It's fine. It's, you know, it's an OS. They're kind of mature at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like this has another focus on 3D and HoloLens stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're very much making it ready for VR in some way.
Yeah.
No, this won't be the creator's update that's coming in March. This is probably...
This probably. Is related to... They're calling it Redstone 3.
Okay. Yeah.
This creator's update is Redstone 2.
Yep.
Neato. All right, well...
You know what the Redstone is from?
Minecraft.
Yeah.
Yeah. Friggin' nerds. Oh, God. From Microsoft, we go to Apple.
Yep.
And in this case, somebody actually found a early iPhone prototype, which, amongst other things, had a virtual click wheel interface. Yep. You remember the click wheel from your iPods?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like this. Only digital.
Yeah, and the interface was essentially like the iPod interface as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it was just the list interface.
Mm-hmm. And, you can tell that this is a prototype just because of how cumbersome this looks.
Yeah.
Because, at least with, your apps, you've got individual buttons and stuff. This is literally a menu.
Yeah.
Essentially like a dual screen interface, but with one screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's already a, it's already a bitch to navigate regular menus and iPhone now.
Yeah.
Imagine that being the entire interface.
Yeah, and having to do it on a click wheel that gives you no feedback.
Exactly.
And you gotta twist it, go down to dial, and then go to your contacts, and then
yeah.
Or God help you, you gotta actually type out the number on that.
Although you could do a very interesting UI thing with the old rotary dial.
Yeah.
Now apparently, as everybody knows, as those who know about this stuff know, is that when Apple was originally developing iOS and the modern iPhone as we know it now, Steve Jobs basically got Tony Faddle, one of the main guys who helped create the iPod, and Scott Forstall, one of the big executives at Macintosh, to go head-to-head and had their two teams compete to try and basically... as it says here, the two teams represented a clashing idea that Jobs had for the iPhone, either enlarge the iPod's OS or come up with a compact version of the Mac's OS. The five phones that we now have are basically the result of Scott Forstall's team.
Yeah.
So it looks like what we have here is one of the leftovers from Tony Faddle's team.
Yeah, Tony Faddle.
Which makes the iPod look kind of make sense.
Yeah. Well, it's cool to see this stuff come out. Usually, old Apple stuff you'd never see.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah,
Even their recent book of all the iOS devices is just pictures of iOS devices. Mm-hmm. Not like real concept stuff. Yeah. That would be cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty tight-lipped about the inner goings-on at the company.
Yeah.
Some for good reasons, and admittedly some for, their awful labor conditions. But
Oh, well.
Well, all right. So, to cap off this nice episode of Let's Weekend we had, it's time for Gamer Mag Remembrances. Are
yes.
we ready? Gentlemen, are we ready?
My body is ready.
All right. So we've got it linked in the show notes. Just everybody wants to know. This is Electronic Gaming Monthly issue 82. That was from May 1996.
PlayStation was already out by this point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I like the spelling of PIX on the cover. PIX.
Because 90s. It is very, very 90s.
Saturn 2.0 revealed.
Wouldn't that eventually become I think that would originally become the Dreamcast, wouldn't it?
I don't think that's it.
No, the Saturn 2.0.
It looks like it was just a model redo.
Yeah.
All right. That was the smaller Saturn.
Went through a couple of those.
All right. So we can, as we can see here on the cover, we got some stuff about Virtua Fighter 3, War Gods. Yeah, we'll have to talk about that again.
Yeah.
Looks like they got a strategy guide for Killer Instinct 2, and a bunch of gaming previews, including Final Fantasy 7. And a bunch of other stuff. So let's go ahead and turn the page. Let's see. And of course, we got button
controller.
Mm-hmm. Life
hosting
support.
Hosting a friend.
God damn it, 90s.
That still looks like a shitty controller.
It does.
Yeah, it does.
It's like the start and select are just two like pill buttons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, and then we got the Shell Shock, which is the tank game with an attitude.
I like the quotes. This sucker moves fast.
Shell Shock will rock your world.
The pure joy of driving around and blowing everything up in sight. That's not a sentence. That's a half a sentence. That's the second half of a sentence.
Yeah.
All right.
Shell Shock will rock your world.
Yeah.
No, it won't. Next.
Yep.
My core design.
Yeah. OPO. Does anybody remember this one?
I remember seeing this, but never playing it.
It's basically a sort of comedic first-person shooter where, well, that image is pretty much all you need to know.
Yeah.
A chef with a jetpack and some
machine
sort of
gun and a frying pan. Yep. Yeah.
That's
the game, pretty much.
Magazine's coming out the top of that gun.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it's another one of those don't fuck with the cook games.
Mm-hmm. And as I think a few of us here, not on just Let's Weekend, but Day Zero and Smash Pan in general, have all had to work at restaurants or food places at one time or another, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Never screw with the cook.
No.
We're telling you this from experience. Also, never screw with the waiter.
Handle your food.
Yeah.
I think he's got a strap on his leg with some spoons and such on that.
Yeah, he does. And I think one of his weapons is like a meat grinder. But yeah, okay, so turn the page. We've got
more ads.
Yeah, more ads. Striker 96 for the PlayStation.
Got baby pictures of everybody.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then we
they
got
all
more
like babies. Surprise.
Yeah. And see, we got more ads. Slam and Jam 96 from Crystal Dynamics.
Featuring Magic and Kareem, but not the team licenses.
Nope.
Photoshopped all of that out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, oh, we got Project Overkill. I do not remember Project Overkill. It's a Konami project. That much is certain. All right, well, now we're at the table of contents. All right. So, yeah, we got some stuff for the Saturn. We got some stuff for the PlayStation. They got a nice self-aggrandizing 5th anniversary feature about how EGM became the biggest and best video game mag ever. Virtua Fighter 3 will mesmerize gamers with its awesome quality. Hmm. Well, I mean, to be fair, Virtua Fighter 3 was pretty awesome.
Yeah, they weren't wrong.
I liked it.
Mm-hmm. And of course, at the bottom, Final Fantasy VII is what gamers have been dreaming about. They had no idea.
It was still well over a year before anyone reading this magazine was going to get a hold of it.
Yeah, it premiered in 97, didn't it?
Yep.
Fall of 97.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nobody realized just what they were fixing to have.
Nope.
I looked up Project Overkill.
All right.
It's a Konami Chicago game. I don't know what the hell the developer's from, but it's an isometric third-person shooter for the PlayStation.
Yeah. All right. Let's see, turn the page. We've got another ad. NBA Shootout for the PlayStation.
Yeah.
I actually really enjoyed this one.
How was it?
It was It was on one of the really early demo discs for the PS1, and it was one of those games that falls squarely in the stopgap between the arcade style and simulation games, even though it's trying to be more of a simulation than anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was just enough of both to be really entertaining. I never did get my hands on subsequent versions of the series, but it did go on for a few years from there. But that first one, I put a lot of time into.
Yeah. Once you know, 2K started doing NBA games, that pretty much was it.
Yeah.
All right. Turn the page. This is press start. This is the video game news section. Yeah, this is right when they were getting ready to I guess this is right around the time they were more or less putting out the Nintendo 64. Or at least what the...
Yeah.
Yeah. And for those who don't remember, back when the N64 premiered, individual games cost about $70 each.
Yeah.
Some of them were upwards of 80 to 90.
Yeah.
Like Superman 64, for example.
For some reason.
Was actually $80. And they've actually got a nice handy little graphic down here in the corner where they're telling you where all that money goes.
Yeah.
So like $18 is retail profit. Varies depending on store's expenses. On average, retailers get 30% revenues. As for $9, dollar distributor profit per game, $1.80 marketing costs. $6.26 shipping and distribution. And then, of course, the $36, that looks like that's for the publisher. Mm-hmm. So that's like $10 hardware license fees, $5 other license fees, $12. Dollars in components, so like the memory chips,
yeah.
$2 packaging and instruction book, $4 advertising and promotion, and $3 publisher profit per game. And then finally, the last $7 is for the actual designers.
Yeah.
So $1.05 developer profit per game, $1.75 computer operating cost, and $4.20 programmer salaries and royalties.
Hmm.
You look closely enough at those numbers and you'll understand immediately why things went south for Nintendo right around here.
Yep. Yeah. A lot of people know at the time, one of the reasons we mentioned Final Fantasy VII earlier, one of the reasons Square jump shipped over to Sony was because Nintendo was absolutely bound and determined to stick with cartridges.
Yep.
You can kind of see why.
Yeah, they mentioned here about $5 for a CD, $12 to $25 for a cartridge for the production costs.
Yeah.
So.
Now, there were reasons that they stuck with cartridges that I agreed with, but the big picture, it wasn't going to work at the time.
No.
Nope.
Yeah,
what reason specifically?
Speed. Well, look what happened to some of these systems when they first came out that had moving parts in them.
Yeah,
you were turning PlayStations upside down to get them to continue running, more or less beyond the grave.
Yeah,
N64, you could drop a fucking TV on and I'll still play.
Yeah, yeah, that thing is nigh indestructible. But yeah, so basically, this was right around the time when they were getting ready to release it, but they were basically taking their time releasing details, apparently.
Yeah.
Looks like they were actually... Let's see. Nintendo Japan has announced an additional delay for the Nintendo 64 in that country from April 21st to June 23rd. So they were actually delaying releases at this point. Which, as we all know, was kind of par for the course for Nintendo.
Yeah.
But Freedom was inside at this point. The system would go on to launch at the end of September.
Yeah. It did launch at the end of September, but I don't think...
Considering it was a system that was supposed to launch early 95,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It had a pretty difficult road ahead of it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think anybody, Nintendo included, really understood what the PlayStation was set to become. Because the first couple of years that the PlayStation 1 was out, it sold well, yeah, but it wasn't like a barn burner or anything.
And then a certain JRPG came out, which we're going to talk about a little bit more in depth later on.
Yeah, and, well, all bets were
off. Yeah, even when you just talk about game prices, presenting one console where it's $40 to $50 for games, another one where it's $70 to $80, and you wonder why things went south.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they were still banking on the Nintendo name.
Yeah.
That's about all they could bank on.
Yeah.
In terms of games.
By the way, over here on the side, on this little sidebar, Sega of Japan will debut a new version of the Sega Saturn that will sell for $199. It's the Sega Saturn 2 that, of course, never came into existence.
No, it did, actually.
Did it ever release over here?
Yeah, it was a hardware rev. It was the V2 of the Saturn. It looked a little. It was the one with the
Was it the round buttons?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, those weren't particularly reliable. Just from what I've heard from folks.
Yeah. And I turned the page, and now when we were talking about cartridges, now you can find out where the money for a $60 CD goes. Hmm. All right, now you're gonna see why this ended up biting Nintendo in the ass.
Yeah.
So
$60, it was $50.
Yeah. So $18 for the retailer, about $1.80 of that is marketing cost, $1 profit per game, and $6.20 shipping cost. So about the same as the last one was.
Yeah.
But what's missing?
Yeah. And then you got the $9 for the distributor. And then the $26 for publisher, where they got $4.40 publisher profit per game, $4 advertising and promotion, $2 packaging and instruction bulk billet, and also $7 hardware license fee, $5 other license fee, $3.60 to press CD.
Hmm.
Now, compare that to how much it took to actually make a cartridge.
Yeah, from $3 to $12. It's not really rocket science.
Yeah, and as for the developer, $7, $1.05 developer profit, so an extra 5 cents, an extra nickel, which actually goes a long way, $1.75 for computer operating costs, and $4.20 for programmer salaries and royalties.
A little bit different, but not much there.
Yeah.
But then you look at what happened in the ensuing years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That became the 50.
Went down.
It went from the $60 CD to the $50 CD, down to the $40 CD toward the end of fifth generation.
Mm-hmm. And
then they did float back up to the $50 DVD around the start of sixth generation, but a lot of that was fluff,
mm-hmm.
I felt.
And now your average game hovers around $60.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we
get a lot of that could be inflation.
Yeah, that's true.
Pretty much.
I like the sidebar here. Mentions Threshold Entertainment licensing Activision Zork for movie and live action TV series.
Hmm. Don't think.
Or at the end it says, "Yeah." In addition, the company has announced plans to create the movie sequel for Mortal Kombat.
Oh.
Which was Mortal Kombat Annihilation,
which was. Not good.
Shit.
Yes, it also mentions Blockbuster's selling their extra Virtual Boys for $40.
Yeah.
Because they were not getting very much rental time.
It says here at the top, the melee's affecting sales of Nintendo's 30-bit Virtual Boy has raised concerns at some retail rental outlets. Yeah.
Atari Jaguar's also got dropped for $50 for their extra units, and Gold Star 3DOs for $179.99.
Yeah,
We've mentioned this before, but there was a period of time in the mid '90s when there were like 9 to 10 different consoles on the market.
Yeah,
and every last fucking one of them got a port of Zoop.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, so those consoles made it real hard for Sony to get taken seriously for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had you had Nintendo's console that would be out at that point, which at this point would be Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
You had the Sony PlayStation.
Yep.
You had the Sega Saturn.
Yep.
You had the Neo Geo.
Yeah. 3DO, the Jaguar.
SNK.
Yeah.
3DO, the Atari Jaguar, the Philips CDI.
Yeah.
And Neo Geo. That,
well, all the various CDIs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You had the Virtual Boy.
Yeah.
And you also had Apple Computer's failed console.
The Pippin, which I think three people bought.
Yeah.
Game Boy.
Yeah.
Game Boy, so off the top of our heads, that is 10 different peripherals. I mean, 10 different consoles on market. Yep. At the same time.
Game Gear was still going.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Game Gear was still going, too. So that's 11.
Yep. So was the SNES and Genesis. They were still getting games up at that point.
They would persist into 98.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, that was kind of neat because it allowed a much more sort of varied number of titles out there.
Yeah, you had choice.
Turbo Duo.
You had more choice, you know. There was more experimentation going on.
Yeah.
You know, there was more, you know, there was, you weren't stuck between, you know, AAA and indie like we are now. There was like a whole spectrum.
Yeah.
Whole spectrum of crap.
Exactly.
There was a lot of that, too, yes.
Gaming felt more like it was yours back then, though, because you had so many different avenues you could go down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we need to move on because we're going to start sounding like old men.
Yeah.
And we got the ad for Die Hard Trilogy.
Yeah, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Greatest Christmas movie?
Yes.
I think it is.
Yep.
All right. Giraffe.
Yeah. And let's see, we got some stuff. Headphones from Sony Electronics.
$15 headphones.
Mm-hmm. D, when that was considered excessive.
A 9.9 foot cord.
Mm-hmm. Gee, can you imagine a peripheral for over $10? Yeah, and now look at like the shit Turtle Rock puts out. And
well, even Sony themselves.
$150
headsets.
Beats by Dre. Those things are like hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, if you want a pair of crappy headphones and you want to pay a lot of money for them, go ahead and buy Beats.
Yeah. And let's see, we got a... we got a controller modeled after RC car controllers.
Yeah.
That's just not a good idea.
This, or a variant of it.
Yeah.
Actually, I played Gran Turismo with one of those things. Wasn't bad.
Yeah. See, I actually would not. Unfortunately, let's be honest. Outside of fighting games, these type of novelty peripherals are basically dead. Mm. But yeah, I could totally see something like this working.
Yeah.
Maybe on PC where you could retrofit games onto it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see, Sega of Japan. Oh, the Link capability. Saturn gets hooked up. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Because this is the other thing that was happening in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
System Link.
The internet.
Yep. The internet was sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, and then we have a nice ad for Darkstalkers.
Oh yeah.
Hellfires by Darkstalkers.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Still one of the most underrated fighting game franchises out there.
Yeah.
Great game. Mm-hmm. Just could never get could never get the type of respect that Street Fighter got. All right. Let's see. We got Intelligent Gamer. God, that sounds pretentious.
They really want you to subscribe, though.
Yeah. Let's see. Mark Davis's The Fishing Master.
Oh, dear.
fishing game for Super Nintendo. The most realistic bass fishing simulation game ever.
Okay.
Developed under the direct supervision of Mark Davis, 1995 Bassmasters Classic Champion and 1995 Bass Angler of the Year.
Yeah, there's your Natsume fishing legacy.
Yeah.
Speaking of Zork.
Zork Nemesis. I
didn't play it, but I like Zork.
Nope. Zork still is entertaining.
Yeah.
It's a missed-ass Zork game.
Yep.
Yeah. And, of course, now we got the reviews. And, of course, this was one of the... I think we've talked about this when we did EGM in the past.
Yeah.
This right here, I loved this.
Yeah, it's very Famitsu.
They did basically rip this from Famitsu, but it's because it works.
It's a good system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The notion you could just give four people all of the reviews for a month.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And and of course, everybody's favorite Sushi X right down there in the corner.
Yeah. Who was many people.
Yeah, he was basically just whoever. I'm pretty sure they had like everybody's list on like a dartboard, and you know whoever the dart
or
hit.
Just they scheduled it.
Yeah.
So let's see, what have we got here? Review. We got Resident Evil for the PlayStation.
Yeah.
That was their game of the month.
Hmm.
And you know, I think you know. Have you guys played the original Resident Evil recently?
No, not recently, but.
It's impossible to play for as somebody that never played it originally.
Yeah, those freaking tank controls are...
That's not the hard part, it's the puzzles.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I got this no thing, where the hell am I supposed to put it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's funny to look at, looking at those polygon-ass graphics, but that shit scared the crap out of us back then.
Yeah.
Especially those door animations. Mm.
Or that, or those dogs jumping through the windows.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how to get to that part. I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
I know the hallway on the map, but it's not. Yeah. I can't get there.
Yeah. Oh, and we have another treat right here. Mario RPG, Legend of Seven Stars for Super NES. That was pretty much the one of the swan songs for the Super NES, and
a good game to leave.
I still
have a few years left in it after that.
Yeah,
but this was pretty much the end of major publishing for it. It was also basically Square Enix's Squaresoft's last game for the system. I still love this game. I have a soft spot in this game because it was the first RPG I ever finished.
Yeah.
And it actually, I have to also hand it to the poetic simplicity of its design as well. How it took sort of the menu interface for a battle and just, basically, attached the functions to the individual buttons.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... I have no idea how much that helped me.
Almost everybody does that.
Yeah. Let's see what else we got for Genesis. Marsupilami. I don't remember that one.
Never heard of it
either. Yeah, I was looking that up. It's a French comic.
Of course. Oh, right. Is it the weird cheetah monkey thing?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I forgot about that thing.
Yeah.
And then we got Iron Storm for the Saturn.
Working as always, hell yes.
Yeah. And then, of course, Night Warriors for Saturn.
Yeah, we should probably...
Probably deserve better than it got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that every review has a note on how you save. Is it password, battery, memory card?
Yeah, because that was the thing back
then.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was back when... passwords and memory cards, you know, those were still relative, you know, passwords were still kind of the standard then. Memory cards.
You didn't take it for granted that everyone had a memory card.
Yeah.
Yeah. Memory cards didn't really become standard until the late 90s.
Yeah.
I like their time to complete medium. medium long. Yeah. That's descriptive.
Yeah. So. Let's see. Next page. Oh, Panzer Dragoon 2 for the Saturn.
Nice. Yeah.
God, those games. Ah, Sega, you have not treated this franchise well.
No.
Time to complete an hour.
Yeah, that one's more specific.
But look, it's still got great reviews. 80, 8.8, 8.5.
Yeah.
Let's see. Worms for Saturn. It's the one on one of those games from the Worms series, which is still going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Time to complete Eternity.
Best feature? They got eyes.
Worst feature? AI's too good.
Yeah. All right, and then Magic Carpet for the PlayStation. Best feature? Good control. Worst feature? Just plain unusual. Poor innocent soul. Just wait until the indie games thing comes along.
Yeah.
See, we got an ad for Descent for
PlayStation Long Box cover.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And remember those?
Yep.
Ah, Long Boxes.
There's a big one on the next page.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, we got Namco Arcade Classics for the PlayStation.
Come to Namco Museum Volume 1.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lucien's Quest for the 3DO.
Mm-hmm. Don't know that one.
And then a
3DO RPG.
It kind of was slim pickings for those.
Also try RPG of Choice. Arena for Game Gear.
Didn't play that.
Yeah, best feature, it's complexity. The worst feature, the small screen.
Yeah.
Which is more the fault of the Game Gear. And then, of course, we got an ad for Williams Arcade's Greatest Hits.
Yeah, those long boxes were just a precursor to the DVD cases.
Yeah, they were.
Pretty much. Mm. And it looks like they got Defender.
They were longer than that.
Mm-hmm. And Hardball 5 for PlayStation.
Also came out for PC.
And PC. Mm. Now this looks like it was more of a hardcore simulation type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Baseball game.
Games were exactly that.
Yeah, like something of a rotoscope look to it.
Mm-hmm. See, and then they got Gaming Gossip. This is mostly like looks like rumors and stuff.
Yeah it's Quarterman.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Delayed N64. Exclusive PlayStation 2 update. So apparently they were already planning the
64-bit machine with more RAM and a tentative release date of fall of 97.
Yeah. It would be a few more years.
Yeah, I believe the thing with the Quarterman is there's like one or two of these is real and the rest are all just made up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The funny part is like some of the ones that he makes up actually end up coming true.
Yeah. Another dude's one title that won't see the light of day on the Saturn is Eternal Champions.
Yeah, that turned out to be true.
Yeah. Master, my latest delivery, Mortal Kombat 2, the movie will be coming out in 1997. Oh?
I think he was right.
Yep.
Unfortunately.
It sucked.
Yeah.
Star Wars Fighting Game starring the Jedi Knights coming out exclusively for the PlayStation this fall.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was right about the timetable, but it happened.
Yeah.
Masters of Terra Kasai.
Yeah.
Probably God, that game sucked.
Unresponsive fighting games ever.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, they mentioned here something about Sony making a PC that could play PlayStation games.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously didn't happen.
Yeah.
Sony has a web browser add-on for the PlayStation that, unfortunately, the company currently does not plan to release in the U.S.
Nope.
It's a proprietary web browser called the Sony Station. Come to the U.S., it'll interface with your TV and allow full access to the internet. Special areas accessible exclusively through the device. Viacom is also working on a similar device that will allow you to connect to the internet from your living room. Now you have that device
in
your pocket.
Yeah. This is back in the day when they called it the information superhighway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They called it Web TV.
Yeah.
Mm. And then the eyeglasses, who gives a shit? Oh, we got the, we got some tricks. Cheat codes, back when those were a viable thing.
Trickman Terry.
Yeah. Let's see, we got Alien Trilogy. Oh, ad for Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3. Yeah. Do we
Sega
need
Saturn.
To... Yeah. For a second, do we need to sort of explain what that was?
Nah.
Not really.
So. Everybody knows what
yeah. that one. All right. We got Mega Man X3, Super NES, College Slam. Oh, yeah, that was how to get the golden Mega Man.
Yeah.
And College Slam. Did you guys play College Slam?
Yeah, it was
a little
like
bit.
NBA Jam, but with college teams.
Ah.
Yep.
FIFA 96, Clockwork Knight 2. I remember actually kind of liking the first Clockwork Knight.
Yeah, wasn't bad.
All right. Fun Web, IBM, let's see, Quest for Fame, looks like a PC thing.
That's a 90s ad. Yep. Kid with a backwards baseball cap and a chain, all
yeah.
chain.
Yep. Connect in between belt loop and somewhere.
Yeah,
yeah, those totally look like JNCOs. God, that is a 90s ass ad right there.
He has like a bowling shirt on.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. We got Agile Warrior for PlayStation. Loaded. Do you guys remember Loaded?
Yeah.
Yes.
I remember this.
Loaded was, God, how do we describe Loaded?
Diablo with lots and lots of guns.
And blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the most insane group of player characters you've probably ever met.
It's true.
Yeah. Okay, and then they did it, and then they did a better one that was called Reloaded.
Yeah. Ridge Racer Revolution.
Yeah.
College Slam. We already talked about College Slam.
Yeah.
The Batman Forever video game.
Yeah.
For the PC. DOS CD-ROM.
No, thanks.
No. No, thank you. No, no.
The graphics alone will blow your PC to bits.
Yeah, right. Let's see. Captain Quasar for the 3DO. In the Hunt for PlayStation. Here's one I haven't heard in a while. Johnny Bazookatone. You guys remember that one? That was the one where it was the dude who was like carrying around like a machine gun guitar.
Hmm.
He was like a bat. He was like a cross between Elvis and Johnny Bravo.
Oh, purple Pompadour.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Mortal Kombat 2 for the Saturn.
Yeah, yeah. Johnny Bazookatone is the 90s name.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's just put a weapon in his name.
Yeah. And, we got an ad for Night Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
All the brutality, carnage, and senseless violence of Darkstalkers. Only darker. Night Warriors. Here it is. It's their little 8th anniversary self-masturbation part, starting all the way back in 1989.
Yeah.
I do like that nice Street Fighter 2 art they got there.
Yeah.
Let's see, just kind of go through this. Oh, this is what I remember this. Oh, God. Every freaking Street Fighter 2 fan remembers this. The April Fools.
Oh, yep. We actually put that there. Yeah.
The most infamous one they ever made.
Yep.
Because the thing is, EGM had a tradition of doing these sort of April Fools ones. And some of these would go out and freaking... like, people would really take the shit literally, like, the nude code for Lara in Tomb Raider 2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was supposedly a way you could play as Sonic and Tails and Smash Brothers Melee.
Yeah.
But this is the one that started it all. Mm-hmm. This is the one that started it all. Xing Long. Let's see what this says here. It says, it seemed harmless at the time. create an April Fool's joke so realistic that you'd have the readers scratching their heads for days. Well, it happened, and boy, did it ever. The infamous Xing Long trick printed in the April 1992 issue, that was EGM number 33, received so much attention that the trick was even reprinted without permission in a Hong Kong comic. Paying closer attention to the name of the submitter should have given the trick away. W.A. Stokens. Waste tokens. And, Fooldagan. Ha. Fooled again. Ha. The final kicker was the fact that we printed an April Fool's context report directly under the trick. Only a few eagle-eye readers caught on to that one. We could tell you exactly how we did that trick, but that would ruin the effect. Kind of like knowing Beavis and Butthead aren't real. So, yeah, this is pretty much how this right here. This is basically how Akuma came into existence.
Yeah,
pretty much. EGM did this one little gag where, and if you've played Super Street Fighter, this will sound familiar. Basically, you had to finish the game under a certain amount of time. And I think there was also you had to win like flawless.
Yeah, you couldn't lose a round, and you had to do double perfect on every map.
Yeah, and then you'd go to Bison, and then all of a sudden, this old dude would somersault in, and then, you know, somersault throw Bison off the screen, and then you had to fight him.
Yeah,
so it's supposed to be Xing Long, which was, I guess the Fanon at the time was that Xing Long was supposed to be Ryu and Ken's sensei.
Yeah.
But as we all know, this was bullshit. This didn't exist.
Nope.
It was a lie. But apparently it was such a big freaking deal. But by the time Super Street Fighter came around, Capcom apparently noticed.
Yeah. And then they decided to kind of run with it.
Yep.
Well, how much money did they make for Capcom doing that?
A lot. Yeah.
But that's because this is basically how Akuma came into existence.
Yep.
Because he literally does the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm actually glad we found that in here because that's kind of one of the things that made them infamous.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning.
Yeah, it's one of the only sort of jokes you could do pre-internet.
Yeah. Before doctoring screenshots was, something data bleeding.
Mm-hmm. Also up there at the top of the page, you got the image for Acclaim's Iron Sword, which, those you don't remember, that had Fabio on the cover.
Yeah.
Because 90s.
Yep.
See, blah, blah, blah. More self aggrandizing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 96, I think, is also when the Atari Jaguar officially died.
Pretty much.
Look at that, Skeleton Warriors. Mm. For the PlayStation and the Sega Saturn.
Yay.
Oh, yeah, Iron Man and Exo Metal War in Heavy Metal, the video game.
Yeah. That's about as 90s as you get.
Yeah. God damn, it is. Because you had Marvel, and you also had freaking, what was it, Valiant Comics. Yeah. Which, for the record, exists again. Still is, they're back. They do exist again.
Yeah.
And they've been putting out some quality stuff, but, God, yeah, that is 90s-ass 90s.
Yep.
Mm.
So let's keep going here.
Yeah.
20% complete.
Yep.
All bullshit.
Nuts and bolts.
And then, let's see, and then we got contest for a Darkstalkers arcade machine, and also for a War Gods arcade machine as well.
Mm.
Also, Return and Fire Area 51, and King of Fighters 95. Mm. They were giving away a Neo Geo, and
pretty good contest.
Yeah, they had a shit. They had a shit ton of contests in this issue. Win a trip to Tokyo. And of course, subscribe.
Yeah.
A Soul Edge tournament, Knowledge Slam. Okay, Virtua Fighter 3. Now, who here played Virtua Fighter 3 in the arcade?
I did.
I did too. Was it a regular cabinet or was it the big ass big screen cabinet?
It was a showcase.
Oh yeah,
big ass showcase ones.
God, I freaking loved this one. I did because it was. I just remember really loving. What was the character, the old drunk?
Yeah. Shoot.
Yeah, I remember loving his stage because it was like a raft out in the middle of a.
Yeah.
Like a river or something.
Yeah.
And you kept falling into the water when it knocked you off, and I just thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at this quote, Yu Suzuki. We can now create differences in the way clothes move, so you can tell the difference between silk and cotton. Yeah. So, yeah, and look at Dural down there at the bottom. The movement and morphing of Dural now approaches the fluidity of T2.
Very shiny.
Shiny. And let's see. Oh, yeah, here we go. Arcadia 1996. War Gods. A lot of people, those of you who don't know what War Gods was essentially a prototype for what would eventually become Mortal Kombat 4.
Yeah.
That they just went on and made into its own game.
Yeah.
It sucked.
I wouldn't mind a well-done fighting game based on, you know, legendary and mythical figures from various pantheons. That would be pretty
awesome. Yeah, this isn't that.
But that's not what we got.
No, this is basically a bunch of...
freaks.
90s-ass characters.
Call it what they are, freaks.
Yeah. In vaguely, in more or less vaguely 3D fighting.
Yeah.
It was, it sucked.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was awful. It was, at best, it was mediocre. At worst, it was damn near unplayable.
Yes.
Let's see. Xevious 3DG.
I loved that game.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's Xevious.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is shoot 'em ups we're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, freaking, you want to talk about a genre that thrived in the arcades.
Yeah. Yeah. That one came home and was like, yep, buying that.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. We got Gunblade New York. NBA Jam Extreme.
That one. Oh, was that the 3D one? Yes, it was.
Yeah,
it's the 3D one.
It's the bad one.
Yeah.
Prop Cycle. I think that's once again, the lost art of arcade cabinet design. It looks like this is where you're like a pedal powered aircraft that you're flying around.
Yeah.
See, and then we got Jet Wave. Just look at this Japanese dude just nonchalantly.
Yeah.
What else we and Alpine Surfer.
Yeah.
With its snowboard peripheral down there at the bottom.
Yeah.
And we had Iron Storm for Sega Saturn. Dead or Alive.
The first Dead or Alive. This brings back memories because, I remember playing this game on the PlayStation and then going over to my friend's place who had a Saturn and he rented the Saturn version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, okay, this is way different. Saturn version was quite a bit better.
Yeah. Also, do you notice something about this right here?
Mm-hmm.
About this little tidbit about Dead or Alive they've got up here?
Yeah.
For some reason, Joe Higashi's there.
Oh, tits.
Yeah, no boobies.
No boobies. Would pretty much become one of the defining parts of the franchise.
Yeah.
See, we got to wait for the better graphics to get that.
Mm-hmm.
Tokyo Wars.
And then we got Tokyo Wars.
Don't remember that. Soul Edge. Do remember that.
Oh, we do remember that one.
Yep.
This is before it came home and became Soul Blade.
Yep.
Soul Edge is a new Tekken wannabe on the block.
However, the detail is superb. The game also has endings, which are very uncharacteristic of Namco. And while they are quite simplistic, they do add to the storyline. That is, especially compared to when it would come home as Soul Blade, wherein the endings were actually interactive. Remember playing as Valdo and basically rubbing your cheek against the sword so hard it shattered? See, hi for PlayStation. There it is, exclusive preview, Final Fantasy VII. So remember when we talked a little bit earlier about how for a little while, for a couple of years, Sony sold well, but compared to a lot of the other consoles at the time, it was kind of middling? Well, this is what turned it around. This right here.
Nobody had seen anything like this at the time.
It's kind of cliche now. Final Fantasy VII has sort of gone on to be the game that had such an amazing reaction to it that over the years it created a backlash just as strong. And you know, it is really difficult, and we've talked about Final Fantasy VII in the past too, but we have to point out once again, when Final Fantasy VII came out, there was nothing like it. Absolutely nothing. Nothing compared to it.
There really was nothing of that scale. Especially that even, tried to touch on the kind of subject matters that Final Fantasy VII took on.
Shall we talk about some of that subject matter?
We had terrorism. The fact you were terrorists?
You were eco-terrorists. Would that game fly today?
No.
Well, probably.
Makes you wonder how they're going to try and dance around it in the remake.
And then, you know, just all the other stuff. Graphics, for example. You know, yes, the characters themselves were fairly polygonal, but those pre-rendered scenery.
I just want to know where these 60 frames per second went that they're talking about here.
they didn't hit that.
That didn't happen.
No.
The menus will move at 60 frames per second.
This is also, you'll know just by the very beginning looking at this, this is the first Final Fantasy game that had Tetsuya Nomura's hands all over it.
For better or worse.
Just looking at the character designs. In fact, I'm pretty sure that's some of his artwork right there. That is.
Which is weird because Cloud is smiling.
Yeah, that doesn't happen ever.
Why is Cloud smiling?
Japanese art.
When
it comes to America, he gets angry.
He gets more like that over on the side. Which, again, another piece of Tetsuya Nomura's artwork. This is the first Final Fantasy game where Tetsuya Nomura not only did the character design, he also was involved in the story as well. You can kind of see that now, can't you? This was also the first Final Fantasy game to have a orchestrated soundtrack.
More or less.
Also introduced the first epic final boss music. That was not all digital. That was not all digital. You know, obviously, you had stuff in the past Dancing Mad and stuff. But this one was a full orchestra and choir. And, of course, it had the biggest gut punch of a plot point that you would ever encounter. That left every gamer weepy for years to come.
Yeah.
I didn't care.
Didn't care, really. Done that already.
I like this part. Square officials stated that in order to meet the deadline, they have set up the largest development group ever assembled in the world. Over 100 people are working on the project both in Japan and at Square's new U.S. office in L.A.
which would go on to be Square EA, I believe.
Yeah, the notion that 100 people worked on that game now is like a huge thing. Now we got regular Ubisoft games getting 1,000 plus people.
Let's keep going here. Like 300 people is like the standard now. Let's see. And of course, we got the Project Overkill preview.
Isometric shooter.
And then, of course, Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 for the Saturn.
Great game.
Again, we mentioned this. Once again, Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3, it was basically just an update of MK3 because basically people were pissed that a bunch of the classic characters didn't make the cut in the original.
Went on to be basically the only good 2D Mortal Kombat.
Pretty much.
So there's that to...
Let's see, we got Iron Storm for
the console port sucked.
Then we got Iron Storm for the Saturn. And let's see, we got more irons. There it is, Johnny Bazooka Tone. See what I was talking about?
Yeah, this looks bizarre.
This does not look like a thing I would play.
It's from U.S. Gold.
Oh, okay. They folded not long after this.
Yep.
Wait a minute. They reviewed Iron Storm.
Yeah.
And they wrote a preview.
Yep. And let's see. Panzer Dragoon 2? Sway! again, terribly, just horribly underrated franchise that Sega has not treated well.
Interesting to see if the new Sega is any kinder to it.
I think so. We'll see.
God, let's hope so. All right, I think we're
getting close to the end here.
See, we got Return Fire, Shining Wisdom.
Hell yeah!
All right, so this was one of those old school Sega RPGs.
It was an action RPG.
Yep.
From a group called Sonic Software Planning, localized by Working Designs. Sonic Software Planning is the team that would go on to become Camelot.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Now property of Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
So, strange.
House. Very interesting piece of gaming history there.
Yeah. We got an ad for an interactive movie, Fox Hunt.
Yeah.
It was a Capcom joint.
Yeah, I think we mentioned that before.
We talked about it last week.
Yeah.
The TV trivia geek that gets sent to kill people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is him.
Rayman.
Then we got Worms for the Saturn again. It's Worms. You've played it before.
Lots of Worms blowing.
I played it way back when it was called Scorched Earth.
Rayman. The original from Ubisoft.
PC CD-ROM.
PC CD-ROM
on Windows, one runs on Win 95 and Windows 3.1.
Oh, right. E3 hits Nuke. So, that Nuke. Was like... Com. Yeah, Nuke.com. Remember, folks, this was back when internet was still kind of its infancy in the public sphere.
Which I think Nuke.com now is just GameSpot.
And let's see. Look at all that stuff. We got... Microsoft Internet Explorer, Netscape Now 2.0.
This dates it pretty well.
Shockwave.
You remember, everybody here remembers Shockwave, don't they?
Yeah, those sure are 90s websites.
And there's Die Hard Trilogy.
Yep.
For PlayStation. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
That was actually a pretty decent game, by the way.
Yeah, it was. It was a shooter. Was that a...
It was three different games.
Yeah, kind of three different things.
Yeah. All right. And Steel Harbinger.
Didn't play it.
Once again, a 90s ass-looking game.
Yeah, lots of FMV.
Yeah.
Now, look at the... See that female alien character down there in the corner? That was kind of standard for what female characters in comic books basically looked like back then.
And they got her FMV form on the second page.
Ooh. Yep. Oh, wow. Look at the amazing special effects.
Yeah.
Like that guy holding the gun in the bottom right.
Yeah. Yeah. It probably cost a couple hundred grand to produce something like that back then. And, you know, now you can basically get the same effects with somebody in iMovie.
Yep. Eat up a kid, get his lunch money. You can make a movie.
Those are probably basic assets in Unity.
Mm-hmm. See, PlayStation, William's greatest arcade hits.
Great. Great.
Yeah, it was Joust, Defender 1 and 2, that type of stuff. Yeah. Earthworm Jim 2.
Fabulous game.
Back when, you know, a game could just be weird as hell and not make any sense. Yeah. None logical. Because that's the great thing about the Earthworm Jim games is you went from one level to another and there was no goddamn logic or reason behind it.
Yeah. Earthworm Jim 2 especially, you would end up, you know, God, it's like you finish one level and you think you blacked out and missed something when the next level starts because it doesn't follow in any logical sense.
Yeah. Let's see, I've been going around a giant junkyard. You know, I went up one of those slider chairs that old people use to get upstairs, and now for some strange reason, I'm a blind centipede.
Yeah, and
floating around underground in a game show? Yeah.
Why am I bungee jumping off of a snot?
Yeah.
So there.
Like we said, just no goddamn sense. Yeah.
Thankfully we have...
Oh lord, we've got some more next wave, some preview, some protos.
Try not to look directly at the bottom right.
Yeah, don't look. Ah. Just don't.
Well, a part of me kind of wants to cut that out and see if the current Sega social media people want to make a meme out of it.
Gotta go to 60 frames per second fast!
Alright.
No. And that was state-of-the-art back then.
Super
Sonic. Yeah, I guess this is the game that was cancelled.
Yeah, wasn't this Sonic, Sonic Extreme?
No,
yeah.
Sonic Extreme
this was like
is
a 3D
surprise.
Game they were trying to make and never could figure out how to do it, so they said, fuck it, we'll just make like a isometric Sonic game.
Yeah. Sonic 3D Blast, I think that was called.
Yeah. I think the 3D assets eventually found their way into Sonic Jam.
Yeah.
But not for actual gaming content, just for some sort of prototype world exploring.
Yeah. And then we got Turok.
Yay, Turok. Not yay. It wasn't that great.
No.
It's on Steam now.
Yeah, it's on Steam. Yeah, you remember some of the weird advertising that there was for Turok 2? Where it's like they were going to pay somebody, I don't know if it was $3,500 to name their baby Turok?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they did, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Do you know who was responsible for that brilliant marketing?
Oh.
No guesses?
No guesses, but the fact that we're turning it into a trivia question makes me feel like I'm not going to be surprised.
You might be. Because it was none other than singer Steve Perry.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The fuck did he have to do with any of that?
He was with Acclaim at that time. I don't know why, but BMX XXX, that was his idea.
Life takes you in weird places, but oh. Fuck.
Wait, are we sure this is the same dude?
The very same dude.
Okay, hold on. I gotta look this up. Because I really don't want to believe that.
I didn't believe it either, but yeah. He totally did that.
Say doo doo.
Just Google Steve Perry Turok, you'll find it.
Hold on. I'm looking at Critical Gaming Network. Mm-hmm. Well, he definitely shares the name, but it doesn't say that this is who you think it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not. You may have gotten your wires crossed there.
Yeah.
It's not saying anything on his Wikipedia page or on anything else.
Well, I'll have to dig into that a bit more.
But... for the record, that is actually a fairly common name.
Yeah, it is. But we'll see.
All
right. Anyways, let's move on. I'll research that later.
Yeah, okay. Creature Shock Special Edition. That was a Data East joint.
Back when they still existed.
Yeah. Tomb Raider, back when it was called Tomb Raiders. This was back before...
Find the FMV pick.
Yeah. And this is back when U.S. Gold was still publishing it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of scary, because if they'd stayed involved, then they might still be relevant today.
Well, they were. U.S. Gold was bought by Eidos.
Yeah. Eidos Interactive. And there's the Game Gear port of Virtua Fighter.
Turn the page.
I own that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
And Rocket Jockey for the PlayStation. I did like the fact that it had the sort of anime plot.
Plot.
That sounds like a sex toy. Rocket Jockey thrusts players.
Yeah.
Of course they would do that.
VR Soccer 96.
VR into stuff that wasn't VR.
Missing FIFA, it's not.
Mm-hmm. Well, this just looks like it's the Team EGM is the sports part. So, yeah. NBA Shootout.
Nice.
NBA Live 96.
Yeah.
MVP Baseball.
Yeah.
And NBA Action.
Yeah, MVP Baseball would end up being EA's thing.
Yep.
About 10 years later.
Ken Griffey Jr.'s Winning Run. That was back when he was like the biggest name in baseball.
Yeah. Yep.
And now he's on the cover of MLB 17. The show.
Dream Team.
Which is a great irony for anyone who was aware of his placement in gaming back in the day. Because... Nintendo owned the Mariners, and he was on the Mariners, and so he got all the endorsements for Nintendo Baseball. And,
See, then we got Dream Team. So, for those of you don't do we need to sort of to point out what the Dream Team was? Because that's been a few years, and I don't think a lot of people.
Men's.
Yeah.
Olympic team.
It was basically all of the greats that you remembered.
Yeah, from the time.
On one team.
The second edition of the Dream Team.
Yeah. So it was Shaq, Scottie
Pippen. Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yep. So let's see. We got...
Basically what Canada's Olympic hockey team would have been back then if the NHL had started going already.
Yeah. Let's see, and then we got Box Score. That's just all the other games they wanted to review.
Video Cowboy and Dindo Perez.
Yeah. Impact Racing? Let's see. Oh, yeah, as everybody remembers, the letter of the month. Let's see. What do we got here?
This is just 90s font all over the damn place.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see this. This is what this is basically what your average website on the internet looked like back then.
It's true.
Everywhere we look. Okay, let's see. Oh, look at this. The very first one they wrote. Dear EGM, I'm writing to you because I am very concerned with current trends in the media industry. Everywhere we look, censorship is on everyone's lips. Censoring public and cable television. Censoring the internet. Censoring video games, etc. What is happening? I now post people have already heard of the V-chip.
Remember when the V-chip was a thing?
Yeah.
Still exists, by the way.
Yeah.
That's like the big plot point in the South Park movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It gives cable providers the right to censor any leased programming. Also wants to monitor the contents of the internet. Good luck. Blah, 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 blah. well, we have to remove fighting games like Virtua Fighter because they portray too much violence? Or how about games like Virtua Cop? That may turn kids into anti-terrorist vigilantes. What about the way Mario crushes his enemies? Might be too violent for little Billy. You know, we laugh, but video game violence...
These were valid concerns back then.
In the mid-90s, video game violence was a big fucking deal. Keep in mind, this was like a few years away from the Columbine Massacre, which would take that debate and shoot it way back into the public consciousness. Yeah. Let's see. I want to... Oh, yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah, here we go. Dear EDM, I have one question. I went to Walder Books and I saw two books on Doom. At first, I thought the books were about secrets and codes for Doom, but when I read the back of the books, I found out that they were just stories. What I want to know is, are the books worth reading, or should I just save my money for other books? Yeah, he's talking about the Doom novels.
Yep.
And they are absolutely worth those reading, were shit. They are complete shit.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a letter here about Kingsfield. Be confused if it was a Doom clone or not.
Nope.
Yeah, for those of you who don't remember, that was From Software.
Yep. Yeah, it was like early Dark Souls.
But in first person.
Yes.
Yep.
Does it make it any less hard?
That game would kick your ass, and then...
That is a series I want to see again.
Kingsfield. Yep. You know, if anybody could bring it back and make it effective, it would be...
From Software.
From Software. I mean, let's see. Oh, yeah, and they're talking about what's going to happen about the old... people who own the old Saturn. If 2.0 is coming out.
Nothing. It wasn't a big deal.
You've got the sturdy version, you're good to go.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we got letter art down here at the bottom.
Buff Mario.
Mm-hmm. For some reason, I remember reading magazines back in the 90s and their letter art page, and Buff Mario showed up a lot. Like, it was pretty much a meme.
Yeah. Buff and, Mario and Confused Peach, for some reason, showed up a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. And Psychopad KO, hyper-programmable 10-in-1 game pad for PlayStation, Sega Saturn, and Super Nintendo.
Sure, that was quality.
If you were lucky, it wouldn't fry your controller port.
I'm going to take a wild guess. Is that the Ultimate Warrior? That's the Ultimate Warrior, isn't it?
Somebody needs a pee in a cup.
Yeah. Next.
All right.
It's probably supposed to be as close as possible without getting sued.
Probably.
Yeah, okay, I think that's the end of the meat of it. Except for...
Shady resellers.
Yeah, which were pretty much standard.
More shady resellers.
More shady resellers. And then, of course, we got the Game Shark. You, a dog. The game, a fire hydrant. You do the math.
It doesn't even make any sense.
Game Shark lets you do anything you want to your favorite games. Oh, God, that just makes it worse.
90s. Right,
and then... And just 90s. And then we have... at the end, we got an ad for Resident Evil. If the suspense doesn't kill you, something else will.
Yeah. Like the controls.
Like the controls. Well, I do believe we've got a show, folks.
Yep.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can, of course, if those of you who are listening, if you want to write into the show, you can, of course, email us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. We will, of course, more than be happy to answer whatever you have to say or read something on the air or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, just call us douches.
No, that's it.
If you want to. We're okay with that.
I was gonna say, that's a dangerous claim.
Yeah. You want us to read in your anti-government manifesto? We'll totally do it. So we hope you enjoyed this. And, of course, you can also listen to us on iTunes and
Google Play,
other places.
In, whatever. We're all over the place.
Tune in. Yeah, we're pretty much everywhere at this point, so you really have no excuse. So with that being said, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Sologi, I'd like to say good night. Get some sleep out there.